following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Shots.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. We have another great show for you, and for one of the rare times on a Thursday, we won't have any Union College men's or women's hockey talk. The men are off this weekend. They just finished up exams on Tuesday. Of course, you heard from Josh Halgy, on the head coach, on Wednesday's podcast. And the women played Wednesday night at Vermont. They were off this past weekend, but they were at Vermont on Wednesday night and pulled off a 1-0 victory, a Carrie-Anne Engelberg goal, with just over 2 minutes left to play, and actually had to go to video review. Her shot hit the back bar. Originally, it was called off the crossbar, but about 55 seconds elapsed before there was a stoppage in play. Then the referees looked at it and determined that the puck did indeed hit the back bar, and the Union getting its first win ever against Vermont. The Garnet Chargers were 0-20 before Wednesday's game, so a big victory for them, and they'll take on RPI Tuesday morning. Yes, 11 a.m. game at Houston Fieldhouse on Tuesday. So that should be a nice matchup, and the two rivals getting together for the first of three meetings. But we'll have some more Union hockey talk on next week's podcast. But well, a lot of great information coming up. Adam Schindler is going to wrap up the area college hockey season, college football season, I'm sorry. And spoiler alert, not good. So we'll still wrap up Union and New Albany, even though New Albany still has one game left against Hampton on Saturday. We're going to call it a season for the area college football teams. We'll talk some NFL. Andrew Catalan, our good friend from CBS Sports, former News Channel 13 sports reporter and anchor. He's going to be calling the Giants-Buccaneers game from MetLife Stadium on Sunday, and we chatted with him about the state of the Giants, and just on Monday announcing that quarterback Daniel Jones will no longer be the starter. It's going to be Tommy DeVito. We'll talk to Andrew about that decision. And we'll go over to the other side of the MetLife Stadium with Dennis Wozniak Jr. of the Associated Press, of course, the New York Jets. And the NFL does a great job. We're going to talk about the Jets situation. And I had arranged this interview late Sunday before anything happened with Joe Douglas, the general manager, getting fired on Tuesday. So this is going to be a fun conversation with Dennis. We always enjoy having him on the program. Of course, he's, like me, a great music lover. So maybe we'll chat some music as well. And then our buddy Ken Fang from Awful Announcing. We're going to go over some of the latest media news, including inside the NBA will still have a life after Turner loses its portion of the NBA package next season. We'll talk about that. And, of course, Dave Sims being named the Yankees radio announcer to replace John Sterling. So a lot to talk with Ken about the sports media business. So coming up, Adam Schindler will join me. We'll wrap up the area college football season for Union and New Albany. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast. Stay informed with the Daily Gazette's e-edition. Download our app, sign up to receive our newsletters, and enjoy exclusive reader rewards when you join our growing community today. Head over to www.dailygazette.com to check out our membership plans. And remember, when credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette reporter Chad Arnold. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2025.
Welcome back to the podcast, and yes, we are starting our holiday greetings for the 2024 season, and we wish everybody a great holiday season. Of course, Thanksgiving coming up next Thursday. Well, the football season for area colleges, Union and UAlbany, just about over for UAlbany, and it is over for Union. Tough way to end the season for both teams, not going well, and Adam Schindler, I'm going to play the sound effect, just the way it went, womp, womp.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You can sum up the way the season ended, for the way the season's gone, for the last month and a half for UAlbany and a lot of the season for Union with that noise.
Well, let's start with Union. They lost the Dutchman Shoes game to RPI on Saturday, and they had their chances, Adam, three times within the red zone and came away with nothing.
Yeah, I mean, this was a 24-7 game that is, in a lot of ways, closer than that indicated. You know, between the 20s, these two teams matched each other. RPI had a couple struggles getting on Union's side of the field early in the game. They corrected those. Union did not. Three times inside the 15, and they got 0 points out of it. Their only score of the game, 67-yard pass. Beautiful pass play for a touchdown. One of the best throws I've seen Patch Flanagan make all season. But when they couldn't run the ball, and when the field condensed and they couldn't either get cushion or get receivers behind guys, they were in serious trouble. And nothing sums it up better than, you know, late second quarter, 7-7 ball game. RPI has to punt from their own end zone and just kicks it straight up in the air. Lands in the, goes in, caught in the wind. Union gets the ball at the 11-yard line. Wow. They go nowhere for a couple plays. They get a penalty. Incomplete pass, 35-yard field goal attempt, no good. They struggled inside the red zone all season long, and it's what really ended up costing them their biggest rivalry.
I mean, how disappointing is that for that to happen? I mean, as you said, it's all that that's been going on all season long. And why did they never correct it?
Yeah, I mean, the running game struggled all year, and it comes down to they had a very inexperienced offensive line. They moved, they had a lot of freshmen playing big spots. They had a lot of guys moving around during the season. Had Matt McCorkle, their left tackle from a year ago, who was one of the better left tackles in all of Division III, had he come back for another season as one of the fifth-year guys, that really could have helped them. He did not. And it was just an offensive line that could not get their running game going. They had 2,000-yard backs a year ago. Those two guys had less than 1,000 yards between them this season.
The team ends up 3-7 in John Drock's first year. How would you assess his performance as the coach?
Yeah, I mean, this was such an uneven season. When they looked good, you know, the Rochester game, Buffalo State game, they looked very, very good. And they were competitive just about every time out. You know, the results against Ithaca and Hobart didn't really bear that out. They had a tough game against Springfield. And then, you know, but you look at it, they should have beaten St. Lawrence. They had a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter, lost that game. And then, they had a really close loss to Montclair State. This was a team that was closer to being 500 or better than their record looks like. They just offensively were not consistent throughout the entire season, and defensively, just when your offense is putting you in that many tough spots, they could not hold up and keep teams off the board forever.
Yeah, and they were 3-1 at home, but 0-6 on the road, and that obviously that hurts. Especially, I think the St. Lawrence game may have been basically that's probably end up killing their season. The way they lost that game, had a big lead and just didn't hold on to it, and lost in overtime.
Yeah, I mean that game pretty much scuttled any chance of making some noise in the Liberty League. From the beginning, after that, it's just okay. We played a tough heading into that game. We played a tough road schedule. You know, 3 out of 4 on the road in the non-conference. That was one more road game to end that 5-game stretch to start the season. If they hold on there, all of a sudden they're 2-3. They're 1-0 in the Liberty League. They're going to be 2-0 with Buffalo State coming in next. And you're looking at a situation where, hey, non-conference didn't go great, but we're getting some momentum. That game. You know, you can't say it definitively, but it had to hurt that team's confidence for a little while. And you know, it was the game that really defined the season for them. You lose a 2-touchdown lead like that against a team that ended up really struggling in the back half of the season, St. Lawrence, and it was a tough one. You know, overall, this is a season. It was going to be a building season. They lost a ton from last year. They're going to lose a ton again this year. But you know, any football coach, especially at Division III, where you're not going through, you know, a ridiculous amount of the transfer portal. This is a coach who had to put in his system with mostly another coach's guys. Mm-hmm. and they're good players. I mean, especially on the defensive end, Union had a bunch of really good players. First team Liberty League selection, Ethan Vanderbrink. Cole Da Silva had 120 plus tackles. The fact that he was not a first team All-League selection kind of baffled me. But you're trying to put in your offense with guys that you didn't recruit. You know, we'll see what happens as guys he recruited this past year and guys he had, as guys he's recruiting now, start to come in.
Is it going to be another transition year the next year, the way you're talking?
You don't know. I mean, really, I think it's you're going to see closer to the identity of what a John Drock offense, especially, looks like.
Now, that next year, it'll be 7 league games, right? Because there's another team's coming in?
Yes, Hilbert is coming in as a, I believe, football-only member of the Liberty League, you know, a program that's only, you know, a handful of years into playing football. Union played them last year, 2023, in one of the most lopsided football games that I've ever seen. It's likely a very tough schedule again next year. The hope for Union is that it will be a home-heavy schedule as opposed to a road-heavy schedule.
What will they need recruiting-wise going into next season?
I mean, first thing you need to recruit is offensive line. I mean, they struggled on the offensive line. And you can never discount what a year of growth is going to do for guys. I believe at least 4 of the 5 offensive line starters are scheduled to come back. So at least you'll have continuity. You'll have a full, you know, offseason, another year of those guys gelling together. And then I think you just want to recruit speed. I mean, Gil Rivera kind of became the downfield threat late in that season. Really, you know, had back-to-back 100-yard games, 3 long touchdowns in those last 2 games. And then you want to find guys to complement them. You know, Robbie Tolbert's a really solid possession receiver, but he's going to be leaving the program after graduating. So yeah, you do that, and then you want to see if you can get some, maybe a big play, you know, guy in the running game, because you know, Michael Fiore and Jonathan Anderson were both, you know, guys who even in 2023, when they were both 1,000-yard backs, were grinded out guys, you know, break tackle and make some plays. If they can get a game breaker back there in the backfield and restore the big play threat to the running game, all of a sudden they're going to really, really become a dangerous team. In the Liberty League, after, you know, Hobart, you've got your Hobart, you got your Ithaca. After that, it's chaos every year.
You think any of the teams from the Liberty League can make some noise in the NCAA?
I mean, Hobart, I assume, is going to be the only team in the tournament. Mm. I did not see the field come up, and Ithaca would have been the only other contender, because pretty much those were the only two teams in the league that finished above above 500 overall. And Hobart's a really good team. They're a physical, tough team, balanced. You know, they pretty much swept up all of the Liberty League awards, so they're a dangerous team. You know, the Liberty League doesn't have the best track record in the last few years. They'll get teams through a round or two, but when you start facing, especially those some of those, you know, Mid-Atlantic and Midwestern teams, they are really, really tough.
Yeah. Well, let's move over to UAlbany. They're going to wrap up their season Saturday with a home game against Hampton, and probably typical of the way the season goes, they had a 17-0 halftime lead at Rhode Island and lost 20-17. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, They started fantastically with their third different starting quarterback, freshman Van Weber, a kid they're really high on, played very well through 51 times in this game. You know, one of the better freshman performances, a true freshman, especially, that you'll ever see from a UAlbany quarterback. And then, you know, they turned them all over a couple of times. Rhode Island started coming back on them. And even then, after they'd given up the lead, UAlbany had a chance to tie the game. They got to about the 8-yard line, got knocked back a couple of plays, but hey, very makeable field goal for John Opalko to send it to overtime, blocked. And special teams in big situations have hurt UAlbany a handful of times. I mean, look, the Elon game earlier this year, they give up 2 kickoff returns for a touchdown. They've had games lost a couple of years ago, I believe, to Rhode Island, I believe, a game that they lost because twice they couldn't get a hold done on field goal attempts. At some point you just wonder, okay, are we, you know, kind of cursed on special teams? And they've had those issues over and over again. And Yeah, that's just a typical of the way the season's gone. When things aren't going well, things like that happen.
What do they have to do to get back to where they were last year?
I mean, UAlbany just seems like it's cyclical. It's a team that kind of builds. They get the right transfer class in. You know, they've done that before. And then you've hit on a combination of guys. If Van Weber is the quarterback of this team moving forward, which you know, there's a good chance he gets a shot at that, unless they want to, you know, give Miles Burkett another shot next year, or, you know, pull in another transfer quarterback from elsewhere. It's interesting, but there, so many things are so fluid at that level. You know, outside of Villanova being very good, the CAA is a complete crapshoot. Year in, year out. Delaware's, you know, on the way out to go and become an FBS team eventually. So the difference between good and bad in that league is not very much. And the difference going from good to bad or bad to good is not very much. It can easily happen in 1 year.
Yeah. Well, we'll finish this up with another Eagles victory last Thursday against Washington. A little struggle early on, and Jake Elliott, a little missed some easy field goals, missed an extra point, but you have Saquon Barkley in the backfield. Everything's all right.
Yeah, when you have Saquon Barkley in the backfield and you have Jalen Carter on your defensive line and Quinyon Mitchell in the secondary, you've got some guys,
yeah.
And that's really been the remarkable thing. This has been clearly a tremendous Howie Roseman offseason. This year, you know, not just the Saquon signing, but the clearly has hit on his first two draft picks. You know, made a terrific free agent signing in Zach Bond that became better than anybody could possibly imagine. It's funny because the second most profile free agent signing was Bryce Huff, who's kind of been a big zero and is now going to miss a few weeks with a wrist problem. But they've done that, and they reinvented their offense and their defense after the early bye really helped this team. You know, if you're a fan, you kind of hate the early bye because, like, oh, we're just getting started. But getting a bye off that really terrible performance in Tampa Bay, which you look back on it as a game where AJ Brown, Devontae Smith don't play. It's 147 degrees outside. They walked onto that field expecting to lose. They lost. They changed things during the bye week, and they've looked like an entirely different
team. Yeah, they play Sunday night at the LA Rams there in SoFi and Stadium in Inglewood, so that should be a lot of fun watching that Sunday night.
Absolutely.
All right, Adam, appreciate all you did during the season, and we'll do this again next season.
Yes, we will.
All right, that's Adam Schindler. We're going to turn to NFL talk. We're going to speak with Andrew Callahan of CBS Sports and the former News Channel 13 sports anchor and reporter. He's calling the Giants-Buccaneers game Sunday for CBS, so we'll talk to him about the benching of Daniel Jones. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast. Hey, pro football fans, it's time again to match wits with other pro football fans and win a prize by playing the Daily Gazette's You Pick'em Football Contest. To play, go to dailygazetteprofootball.upickem.net and make your picks before the first game kicks off each week. If you have the most weekly points, you win a $100 Hannaford gift card. Play the Daily Gazette's You Pick'em Football Contest today.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette digital producer Stan Hootie. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2025.
Welcome back to the podcast. The New York Giants are a mess. They have changed quarterbacks, and they'll host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming off their bye week. And the man who will be calling the game for CBS Sports, our good friend Andrew Callahan, former News Channel 13 sports anchor and reporter. Andrew, how you doing? It's been a while since we chatted.
Yeah, Ken, always great talk with you. Happy early Thanksgiving. I know you're happy about your Eagles.
Yes, but, I am.
if we do or do not get into that, congratulations.
Thank you very much. I thank the Giants for Saquon Barkley every day. we'll talk a little bit about that. But first, before we started, before you came on the air, some breaking news, and you called the Jets game against the Colts on Sunday on CBS. The Colts won that game 28-27 with a late touchdown. The Jets have fired general manager Joe Douglas. Your thoughts about that?
Well, it was the last year of his contract, so I think that, you know, if you read the tea leaves based on the change that the owner made with the head coach, you know, early in the season, you know, it kind of seemed like we were going to be headed for that with the GM as well. So I guess in this sense, they get a head start on the move as opposed to waiting till the end of the year. Look, I don't think that anyone is surprised by the move. Maybe the timing of it is a little surprising that he didn't get till the end of the year. But clearly the owner wants to get a jump start on looking at you know, the next candidate who will come in there. And it can't be a surprise to many. I mean, the team has just had really disappointed in a major way this year. I mean, you know, so many people thought that this was going to be the year that at least they got in the playoffs, ended that playoff drought, but didn't happen. I mean, for a variety of reasons, this team is looking at another long offseason, and they're going to have to start over again with a new head coach and a new GM as well.
Yeah, I mean, in talking with both Dennis Wozniak Jr. and John Warrow, the Associated Press, before the season, I mean, they thought this division could be wide open. Even John Warrow said the Bills were in a rebuilding mode, and not bad rebuilding mode. You're running away at the AFC East.
Yeah, I mean, you know me, I do the Bills preseason games, and so I'm up there for most of the summer. And, you know, I think that kind of fueled, that talk really fueled the Bills. They are a team that plays better as the underdog with the chip on their shoulder. And so many people were saying, oh, no Stephon Diggs. They didn't really go out and get anyone to replace him. And, you know, the defense lost Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. And how are they going to compensate for that? You know, this team fuels on stuff like that, and what a performance they put up against the Chiefs this past Sunday. And, you know, I think that their GM, Brandon Bean, has done a wonderful job, and Sean McDermott is doing probably his best job as a coach in his time with Buffalo. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that they're up there, but I am surprised that they don't have competition from the Jets, because I was in that group that thought the Jets would be competitive as well.
Of course, everybody thought Dolphins would be, because Tua got hurt, and sure, everything went south for them for a while, so that sort of helped the Bills as well. Do you get a Super Bowl ring if the Bills win?
That's a great question. I would love one. I have a feeling I will not get one, but I would absolutely love it.
Well, let's talk about the game you're calling Sunday on CBS. We'll be seeing on WRGB Channel 6 here in the Capital Region, 1 o'clock. The Giants taking on Tampa Bay, and the Giants coming out of the bye and just coming out as, you know, of a mess of a season, 2-8 on the season. And on Monday, they announced that they're benching quarterback Daniel Jones in favor of Tommy DeVito. Is this the end of Daniel Jones in New York?
I think it is. I mean, I think that everyone kind of knew with the way that his contract was structured that if it wasn't a lights out type of season that they were going to cut bait with him. And it seems like they've decided to do that now. I'd be surprised if he played another game in a Giants uniform. I think that, you know, by making him the third quarterback, that is kind of what they're telling you. He's not even the backup. That's going to be Drew Lock. So, you know, another tough year for the Giants. They're going to have to be like the Jets and start over again with a new quarterback. And, you know, the owner has said he's not going to make any changes in terms of the GM and the coach, you know, this season, in season, but you just never know what'll happen after the year. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the year plays out with DeVito. Obviously, he's a fan favorite. The Giants aren't going to the playoffs, so maybe there's just a little bit of a spark that he provides. But in terms of Daniel Jones, I think that his time in New York is done.
Of course, there's a lot of debate. You know, he ended up getting a big contract, and the Giants decided not to pay Saquon Barkley. And when, you know, all kidding aside with, you know, thanking the Giants for Saquon Barkley, do you think that move, you know, paying Jones money and not Barkley, has come back to bite them?
Oh, big time. Yeah, big time. I think if they could do it all over again, they would have tagged Jones and signed Barkley. I think that they would probably admit that as well. Look, you know, Saquon is a special talent, and he really is a special person. You know, we were with him in Philadelphia a couple weeks ago, as you know, at the Eagles-Jaguars game. And, you know, he's a guy that you want to build your team around. I mean, he's a guy that you send out in the community and is the face of a franchise. Now, they have a Jalen Hurts as well, so they don't necessarily need that from Barkley, but he's going to provide that anyway. He's become an instant leader on that team. We know what he can do on the field, but I think what he brings off the field in the locker room and in the community makes him even more of a rare special player in the NFL. And I think that the Giants sorely miss a guy like that. And, you know, Tyrone Tracy has run the ball well for the Giants this year, but made no mistake, Barkley is one of the best, if not the best, running back in the league.
Well, the Eagles also have a better offensive line than the Giants, true. I think, which has really helped springboard Barkley's success this year. I mean, if the Giants had any kind of semblance of an offensive line, he probably stays there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And also, he doesn't have to be everything. I mean, the Eagles can beat you in a lot of different ways, whether it's Hurts running or, you know, as you know, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And then there's a lot of different ways that Philly can beat you. So they don't need him to be Superman. Giants kind of needed him to be Superman behind that wounded offensive line, and it just really hasn't clicked the last few years, and you're seeing him thrive now in Philly.
Of course, you called that Jaguars-Eagles game, as you mentioned. Can you still contemplate what he did at that leaping jump backwards? I mean, I was out with my son at a sports bar in Latham when we were watching the game. We jumped out of our seat. That was an incredible move.
It's unbelievable, Ken. I look back at that play and calling it live, you know, I thought the two spin moves before were super impressive. And then you see him jump up and you're calling the game from the booth and you, whoa, another great move. But that was one of the first times that when I saw the replay, I was like, holy cow. The live action wasn't as good to me as the replay. The replay was what we all marveled at and will for a long, long time. Yeah, that was an incredible play. He claims he's done it before. But we, Jason McCourty, Tiki Barber, and I, we had never seen anything like that in a game at that speed. And there's an unbelievable play by Barkley.
It's almost like he had eyes in the back of his head because there was no way he could have seen it. It was just amazing. I mean, the reaction you saw, if you saw, memes and, posted videos of the Eagles benches going, they couldn't believe it either. So getting back to the Giants, there was an article by Tom Canavan in the Associated Press late last week on the Giants' bye, and Joe Shane thinks the team's heading in the right direction. Are they? I mean, it's 2-8 heading in the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what Shane was probably trying to get across is that, you know, some of his rookies from the draft class this year have performed well. Now you look back at other draft classes and they haven't perform to the expectations, but Malik Nabers seems to be the real deal, legit. Tyler Newbin's playing a ton of snaps at safety. Drew Phillips is also good on the cornerback side. Tracy appears to have been a steal late in the draft at running back, so I have to imagine that that's what he's pointing to when he sees that he's got a young nucleus that he feels they can build upon. But as we know in this league, it's all about the quarterback, and they didn't get it right with Daniel Jones, and If they're to make the next pick for quarterback, it's a move they have to get right. And the draft class doesn't appear to be as good as prior years. That works against them. So are they going to have to get a Sam Darnold type, a Justin Fields type, or do they go young and try to build around a rookie QB? So there's a lot of decisions to be made in the offseason, but I have to assume that when Shane was talking about heading in the right direction, he means the play of his rookie class, which to his defense has played well this year.
I mean, is Tommy DeVito the answer? I mean, I know he's like you said, a fan favorite last year and all the chicken parm stuff and all that stuff, but realistically, is he the savior? I mean, is he the quarterback going forward into next season?
I'd be surprised if that's the case. I mean, I think that he may be able to provide a spark, as Brian Daboll said, this year, just to try to get them going, get them a little life. But I can't imagine that he's, he could be on the team next year. He could be the backup quarterback next year. But I would think that after the last several years with Jones, the Giants are going to look for a bigger name or to build around a younger quarterback for next year. But hey, never know. If he plays lights out, maybe he becomes their guy. But I got to think that on this day right now, that's not what they're intending for 2025.
Well, here's the issue, though. I mean, if he sparks them and they start winning games, that affects their draft position, dude. It's one of those things. You want to, please the fans, but I think the fans, you realize maybe it's better off you just lose the rest of these games and get into this position where you have a high draft pick instead of, trying to go, mediocre, fall a couple games below 500 at the end of the season. Doesn't make much sense.
Well, I think the fan has every right to feel that way, but when, you can't do that with a team. You would lose the locker room. I mean, there's guys out there who want to win, who are busting their butt, who don't care about the draft pick. I mean, if you ask the 53 guys on that roster, none of them are thinking about the draft position for the Giants next year, nor should they. I mean, they're getting paid to go out there and make a name for themselves and make money for themselves this year. So you can't lose the locker room. You know, tanking doesn't work in the NFL. You would have mutiny on your hands. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do believe that the fan probably wants them to lose these games, but there's nobody in that organization, in that building, that would want that, because you can't run a team that way.
I mean, you mentioned it, but do you feel that Brian Daboll is safe at this point? I mean, can he be blamed for any of this?
You know, safe might be a strong word, but if you're asking me if I believe in Brian Daboll, I'd say yes. Getting to know him from his time in Buffalo and then calling some Giants games the last few years, I mean, I think he has proven track record developing young quarterbacks. Didn't work with Daniel Jones, we know that. Mm-hmm. And certainly Brian Daboll is not innocent in the struggles of this team the last few years. But, you know, I'm kind of in that camp now where starting out with the young, hot coordinator isn't the way the Giants need to go, or really the way the Jets should go either next year. I think that both these teams need someone who has coached games before in the NFL. So for the Giants, that could be keeping a Brian Daboll. And for the Jets, that could be someone else who's not a first-year head coach. I don't think that's necessarily what that team needs either.
There's a guy out there, I think he's won a couple Super Bowls, Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I've heard about him.
Although he seems to be enjoying himself in the media, which to me, he has that dour personality as a coach. But you see him interviewed, you know, away from football or even NFL when he's not talking to his own team. He seems to be a genuine, enjoyable person, can enlighten you with things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's interesting is that, you know, the times that I had a Patriots game with Belichick as head coach, we'd do our production meetings, and he was fantastic. I mean, he would go on about the history of the league, and he would get so in-depth about, you know, the way his team practices or a moment in time, you know, historically. So, yes, when he went to the podium, we all saw him with the hoodie on and, you know, kind of mumbling a little bit. But, you know, I think the real coach is what you're kind of seeing on TV now. I do find it interesting that after all these years now, more people are seeing that side of him. But I'm not shocked to see it, just because I've been fortunate enough to have some time with him over the years. But I still think, bottom line, he wants to coach again. He wants Don Shula's record. And I'd be surprised if he wasn't coaching somewhere next year.
Let me ask you about Tampa Bay. And they're also coming off a bye week. And do you think the Cleveland Browns still wish they had Baker Mayfield?
Got to give Baker a lot of credit, and he's a fun guy to be around. The team loves him. He's all about getting the job done, team working hard, and credit to him. I mean, he could have easily, you know, gone the Johnny Manziel route, and he believed in himself. He got other teams to believe in him, and certainly Tampa has put their trust in him by signing him to a contract. So, you know, I think it's a Tampa team that is alive in that division. Atlanta has not been able to kind of, you know, get some separation. Bucks are getting healthy now. You know, they might get Mike Evans back this week. They might get Jamel Dean back defensively. So I think this is a team that, if you look at last year, really clawed their way down the stretch, was able to get in, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do it again.
Yeah. Well, we're watching Sunday at 1 o'clock on CBS, and have a lot of fun. Oh, let me ask you, how's the three-man booth working out? That's a lot of guys having fun.
Yeah, you know, I had one last year with Tiki and Matt Ryan. Mm. And you know, these things, you know, take time. I think that each week, you know, you get a little bit better and a little bit better. And I thought that happened last year. And then Matt, credit to him, they wanted him in the studio, and he's doing a great job there. So we get Jason McCourty, who's just a wonderful person, really getting to love getting to know him and work with him. And again, you kind of reset with three, right? We kind of go back a little bit with a new guy, but now we're kind of you know, building back up again to where we got at the end of last season with Matt. So it's been fun to be around them. And, you know, the key for a three-man booth is nobody can have an ego. And I don't think the three of us don't have one. So it doesn't matter who's talking or who's telling what story. We all get along really well. And that is certainly a big help when we go to the air every Sunday.
All right, Andrew, appreciate it. A few minutes, as we said, 1 o'clock Sunday on CBS 6 here in the Capital Region. It's the Giants hosting Tampa Bay. Andrew, always good to catch up with you. And have fun on Sunday.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. Always great chatting with you.
All right, that's Andrew Catalano. I have Dennis Wozniak Jr., the Associated Press. We'll talk about the Jets and the firing of Joe Douglas. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity. From the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette sports writer Mike McAdam. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2025.
Welcome back to the podcast. And now we're going to talk about that other football team that occupies MetLife Stadium and is playing just as badly. It's the New York Jets, and they made some news earlier with this week with the firing of general manager Joe Douglas. And it looks like just a clown show there with the Jets. And Dennis Wozniak Jr. From the Associated Press, who covers the Jets and the NFL and probably deserves combat pay for covering the Jets, is joining me now. I'm always great to have Dennis on. And Dennis, what is going on with the Jets?
Yeah, that's a good question, Ken. I think some Jets fans would say the same old Jets. You know, this is something you just see year after year after year, and you have to feel for them too. I mean, there's been a struggle for these people who root for this team for so many years. It's been, but it's been a season that hasn't been quite many others, if any others, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it started with week five with Robert Saleh getting fired, and then next thing you know, Joe Douglas gets fired and Aaron Rodgers, who knows what's going on there. And let me ask about Robert Saleh. Did he deserve to get fired?
I think when you look at it just objectively, record wise and all that, yeah, I mean, he didn't do what you expected him to do. And then that was lead a team into a playoff caliber team. He still believed this team that's 3-8 right now, but when he was fired, they were 2-3. He still believed that they could be a playoff team. Not only they could, he believed they would be a playoff team. So I think the timing was what was strange, because Woody Johnson has never cut ties with a coach in the middle of the season, let alone like after five games when the Jets are 2-3. And yeah, you know, things coming out of London, Woody Johnson was there, you know, as we know, he was the ambassador to the UK. I'm sure there was some embarrassment there. I just think those two guys never really meshed. And an important part of this is that Robert Saleh was not hired directly by Woody Johnson. Christopher Johnson, Woody's brother, was the one who was involved in that hiring, along with President Jaime Alai and also the GM Joe Douglas. Mm-hmm. So there was I'm sure there was an emotional connection there, but there wasn't that strong bond where he was the guy he hired. And really at this point, he said, Woody Johnson, that he needed to make a move because he didn't like the direction the team was going and it needed some sort of spark. And he believed that it was the best roster that's been assembled in the history of the franchise and all of this stuff. So, I mean, with all those things, he felt desperate and needed something. Okay, we're going to do this and put Jeff Ulbrich in charge on an interim basis, and it's going to make things kind of pop off and like jumpstart this team to what it should be. And they're 1-5 since. So I think, like, coming back around to that, did Robert Saleh deserve to be fired? I think eventually, yes. But if you were so uncertain about him, why wait 5 games into this season when it clearly has affected the vibe of the team rather than just cut ties before this season and try to, like, move forward? I'm sure Aaron Rodgers would have been very involved in choosing of a coach at that point because he was still very much in the plans. But now, like, all bets are off because you don't know how much longer Aaron Rodgers will even play, you know? So, I think the timing was what was off with that. And also with Joe Douglas, too. I mean, it's like it makes a little more sense with Joe Douglas here because now – you kind of get the ball rolling in terms of finding the guy who's going to, or woman, whoever the person is to run this organization moving forward. And let's keep in mind, like I mentioned, the ambassadorship before, he served in that role under Trump his first term. Now Trump is back as president-elect, and Woody Johnson could end up serving in that role again. And if that happens, he would have to assume responsibilities again to Christopher Johnson. So if Woody gets to pick the GM and get that ball rolling, so when he does go, he knows who's making the calls, making the decisions, I think that might be in play too.
Has Aaron Rodgers put in his resume for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to see what's kind of gone on. Like, obviously, you know, Rodgers is not playing up to what you would expect or what he would expect. And when you see a guy who's got that resume, you expect more. I think the most alarming thing with him has been, and I'm writing, I have a line about this in the bye week story for the Jets where I just kind of outline what's gone wrong. He looks tentative. When you look at him out there, I mean, just covering the game last week, it just, you know, you thought, take some shots down the field, you know, and you haven't seen that enough. And he's certainly, obviously, not a gunslinger. Like when Favre was here, you knew that guy's throwing the ball and he's going to throw it deep and he's going to just put that ball up there. I mean, that's the type of player he was. Aaron Rodgers is more of a cerebral quarterback, but he's got a good arm. But he's not testing downfield, and there's no answer as to why that's happening. Is he burned by the fact he had 7 interceptions early in the season? Is the game plan just not opening it that way? I mean, you know, he's got Devontae Adams. He's got Garrett Wilson. He's got guys who can get down the field and stretch it, but that's not happening. And then you hear these reports about Woody Johnson kind of broaching the subject of, after 4 games, that, you know, we should sit Rodgers. And I think there's a lot of interpretation that's kind of been taken with those stories that have been out there. But Rodgers, after that 4th game against Denver, acknowledged that he was beat up, banged up. He had a sore knee. And he said, you know, like, I'm feeling like physically, I'm kind of mad, but, you know, I'll get through it. Logically, I would think if there was a meeting, there would be a question. Hey, what if this guy, this 40-year-old quarterback who's really banged up coming off an Achilles tendon tear, what if we like see if he sits? Should he sit and get healthy? Like, how do we want to go? I believe that now, like, I don't know for a fact what went down. You're hearing these stories, mm-hmm. but I feel logically that would make sense. Is he okay enough to go out there on the field? That's a fine question. And if the owner asked that question, I don't necessarily know that means he wanted him to be benched, but maybe he was asking to consider sitting him until he's healthy. So I think there's a lot of stuff. You're going to hear stuff. We're still 6 games left in the season. you have a fired coach, a fired GM, disgruntled players, disgruntled front office people. There are probably going to be more stories that come out. So, I mean, just buckle up.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of, going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, to me, as you said, you know, Rodgers is coming off the torn Achilles. So he basically, you know, played, what, four plays last year in that Buffalo game. How would he be so banged up 4 weeks into a season where he, you know, he was basically, you know, rehabbing, recovering from the Achilles?
You're asking, like, how could he be so banged up?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think early in the season, the protection wasn't great. He was getting bombarded by, you know, pass rushes early on in the season in those first couple of games against San Francisco. And Denver really did a number on him, where over the first several weeks, he was dealing with a sprained ankle, a sore knee, a sore hamstring. If you look back at some of those games, there were plays where he was in obvious pain. He was grimacing, and you thought, he's hurt. And he ended up not leaving the game and not missing games. And I think that took a toll on him. And the funny thing is, he recently, I can't remember if it was before the Texans game or before the Colts game, where he was talking about, hey, I think it was before the Colts game, actually. This is the best I've felt, you know, and I think that's what it was, because they had that break from the Thursday night game where they beat the Texans to the Colts game. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is the best I've felt in, you know, since the beginning of the season. And that made sense because he's gotten beat up. So, but he didn't play like he was healthy. I mean, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things going wrong there, but that was the cause of those issues. He was getting thrown down, twisted, like just thrown to the turf. And that was the thing. It's like, man, this guy's coming off that injury from last year. And that same leg is getting beat up. And I think, you know, it's not the Achilles that he said was the problem. It was the ankle and the knee and the hamstring. So that kind of prevented him from being able to kind of roll out and make some of the plays that you're used to seeing from him. He's never been that speedster type, but he was able to make plays with his legs and extend plays. And that was really holding him back. So again, that leads to the question, like, should he sit a little and maybe just have Tyrod Taylor play until he's healthy over the next two games or one game or whatever?
Yeah. Where did it go wrong for Joe Douglas?
That's a complex question, because I think he's got an interesting resume. I think when you look at certain things with him, look at that 2022 draft, and you see that he drafted Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner and Breece Hall and Jermaine Johnson, and he's had some other hits, Elijah Vera Tucker when he's healthy, some of the other players over the years, Michael Carter. I think he's had some hits and he's had some misses, and some of the misses have been big misses. And look, he basically, you know, gave up on Sam Darnold, traded him to Carolina, and they drafted Zach Wilson. And both of those have been misses. I mean, look how Sam Darnold is playing. And that's not to say Darnold would have been this type of quarterback if he had stayed here. Chances are he wouldn't, because Darnold has since played in Carolina and San Francisco. And yeah, I think I'm even forgetting a place at this point, but you know, he's been around and he's had to sit and learn. And I think that was one of the issues with Zach Wilson. He needed to sit and learn instead of immediately being the quarterback and the face of the franchise. And if you remember Zach Wilson's rookie year, the Jets really had no other option as a backup. So it was, you know, trial by fire, yeah. Throw him out there. And he was not ready for that. And that hurt. So I think the quarterback issues were big problems for Joe Douglas. I mean, and now Aaron Rodgers too. You trade for Rodgers, you expect, you know, not being 7-10 and 3-8 and now out of a job. The offensive line was never consistent enough. That was an issue. And he had some big misses in the draft with some players that just never developed into core players, other than that group that I mentioned earlier. So those are the things, I think. So it's a very spotty, you know, record. He made some trades. Look, he brought Devontae Adams here this year. He brought some big names in previous years that just didn't work. I mean, Tyron Smith is probable Hall of Famer. He's old, you know, and he's banged up now. So those are the things where once you get to this point, all the people who have made decisions on and off the field, well, they have to pay as far as Woody Johnson's concerned, and coach and the GM are out the door.
Of course, the Reddick's holdout didn't help either.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was a bad look too. And, and I think Woody Johnson was frustrated by that, but like there are some conflicting information on who was at fault. If the Jets had offered this amount, whether Reddick would have accepted and Woody Johnson might have nixed that, and then it turned into the prolonged holdout. So, like I said, you're going to hear all kinds of stuff back and forth from people who are not happy and, just kind of sharing how things actually went down. So it's just a mess. And I mean, I just feel for the Jets fans because you had that hope, and even Rodgers has talked about, you got to hold on to that hope. And I just don't know that you could do that now with so much uncertainty once you get past week, 18 and the playoffs are starting, and you're sitting home again watching other teams play.
Who are the possible candidates for both those jobs?
You've heard a few names being thrown around. I don't really know at this point. Like, as far as coach, you hear some of the familiar names like Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, Mike Vrabel. I think the way they have to go with that, it depends on really the GM. I mean, you bring somebody who's been in this before. And right now they have Phil Savage, who was the GM of the Browns a few years ago, and he's serving as the interim right now. Do you stay with him or you go outside? There are some other candidates off the top of my head. I'm just kind of drawing a blank right now. Everything's crazy. But I think I think one of the decisions that needs to be made here is who will run football operations for the Jets. A couple of fans have reached out to me and said, I feel like what this franchise needs is a football czar type. A guy who oversees everything that's going on and really has the power to run things, and where Woody Johnson and ownership don't meddle as much. And I think maybe that's where we're looking at now, that maybe it's time to change things up and maybe go in a different direction. And I mean, everything hasn't, worked that, you have before. One name is Ray Agnew, who's the Lions assistant GM. Like, maybe you bring him in because of what they've been able to do, and he's seen how to build a team. There's other people. Kansas City's Mike Borgonzi, he's a guy who's seen success. I think you need to do that. I think you need to bring in somebody who knows how to build a team and has been part of that process. And then you go from there, and the coaching, that'll play out, and we'll see who's coming. Bill Belichick's not coming.
That's not for coming back for a second stint, huh?
No, that's not going to happen. Some of those other, names I mentioned, those are possibilities. And in the big picture scheme here, Ken, the biggest questions though are who wants to come here, because they've seen how this has gone. And Joe Douglas, really, think a bit. If you think back, Robert Saleh was a guy that everybody wanted and everybody thought was a great fit, and the franchise and the fans celebrated that pick. Same with Joe Douglas. It was like, oh, he came from the Eagles and the Ravens. He's seen it. He knows what to do. He's going to build it. And Douglas was making some nice moves when he was getting draft picks for Jamal Adams, mm-hmm. and other guys. Like, it was like he was celebrated, and people liked, this big guy like walking around like, boom, it's Joe Douglas. But you got to win. And I think, it's one of those things where, they made the right moves, but things just didn't turn out the right way. So now it's like, okay, what's next? And I think if you're one of those candidates, you look and see what went wrong with some people who were really top candidates for these jobs, and it turned into this, where they were fired mid-season, something the Jets never did. So that might scare some people off.
Aaron Rodgers' future with the Jets, what's that going to be?
Yeah, I can't imagine them moving forward with him at this point. He said, you know, I think so, yeah, that he wants to play next year. That, you know, that's not a great endorsement, you know, or just kind of, you know, solidifying his stance on that. I think because he knows everything's uncertain. He's going to be 41 soon, in a couple of weeks. And, you know, what is this franchise going to do? I mean, he has a year remaining on his contract. It's non-guaranteed money. He'd count $23.5 million against the salary cap next season if they have him. But if they cut him or he retires before June 1st, it would be a $49 million dead money charge. But if they do it after June 1st of next year, then it would be a $14 million dead money charge next year, and then the remaining $35 million in 2026. So you can move on from him and not be too hampered financially next season. I think that dead money hit in 26 will hurt. But I mean, the non-guaranteed money, you know, I can't imagine that with everything going on, because there's going to be a new coach, a new GM, a new system. His guys will be gone. I mean, Devontae Adams might not be here next year. So if you're Rodgers, you're like, you know what, I'm out of here too. So, you know, I can't see that happening right now, him playing next year. But then again, now the Jets will be back in another situation where they're trying to find a quarterback, and around and around and around we go. I mean, we've been talking for a few years here, Ken. It's like, hey, maybe they found the guy. Hey, maybe they found the guy. Well, maybe this is the guy that finally they got an established guy. Nope, that didn't work either.
Well, I imagine you're starting to plan your 2025 concert schedule, so that might be the most exciting. I think in 2024, you'd probably be most exciting thing. So MetLife Stadium with the concert you attended over the summer.
Yeah, I had fun. I had fun with that. That was a good way to break up the monotony of what was going on at training camp, you know, and like, I'm glad I had those shows. And, you know, I love live music, as you know, and just, you know, one of those things that you just get out there. But yeah, let's see that. I mean, those are the most exciting things I've seen out there. So let's get some good football going, you know.
Well, Dennis, as always, I appreciate a few minutes, and have a happy Thanksgiving. Have a great holiday season. And once the Jets decide who they're going to GM and coach are going to be, we'll chat then.
That sounds good, Ken. All the best to you. Enjoy the holidays. And yeah, again, I feel for the Jets fans. Hang in there.
Now, I'll talk to your bosses at AP and see if you can get a nice raise. Thanks again, Dennis. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right, well, coming up, Ken Fang of Awful Announcing joins me. We'll talk some sports media. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Explore the benefits of subscribing to the Daily Gazette, like our convenient e-edition, app, personalized newsletters, and unique reader rewards when you join. Start your membership today. Offers redeemable at www.dailygazette.com.
Hi, this is Tyler A. McNeil with the Daily Gazette. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2025.
Welcome back to the podcast, and I always love having my next guest go on talking sports media. It's Ken Fang from Awful Announcing. Ken, how are things going?
Good, Ken. How are things with you?
Not too bad. Can't complain. It's getting towards Christmas here, and another year behind us, and get ready for an interesting 4 years.
Yes, absolutely.
We won't talk about that, but let's get into some of the topics I'd like to get on. First of all, we had a rare Saturday night news drop that was announced that Inside the NBA, the outstanding show on TNT, is going to stay around. It's going to be part of ESPN and NBC. I mean, how surprising was this news, especially coming like at 9, 10 o'clock on a Saturday night?
I know. It was so strange. I mean, Joe Flynn of the Wall Street Journal, who's a fantastic reporter, broke this story. And interestingly enough, Ken, he's been on top of this whole thing about the NBA and Warner Brothers Discovery, the lawsuit that they tried to do to try to get back into the NBA. Well, it was an offshoot of this, but the fact is that the takeaway is that Inside the NBA, which we were all feared was going to go away after this season, because TNT lost the rights to the NBA. Well, they'll continue thanks to a sub-licensing deal to ESPN. TNT will still produce it. It looks like right now, as it stands, three-fourths of everybody of the panel is going to be there. Shaquille O'Neal still has to sign a contract, but everything goes well. You'll still see Ernie. You'll see Charles Barkley. You'll see Kenny Smith and Shaquille O'Neal, this time on ESPN and ABC, and going all the way to the NBA Finals, which really they should have been doing all along. But I think it's a great move, and it keeps a beloved show on the air for at least six more seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I just ESPN has not had any success with their NBA shows. They've had so many different people go in there. So, I mean, what happens to that show now? Where do some of those people go?
Well, it looks like they're going to stay. They're not going to be on the finals, although Stephen A. Smith, his contract is still up in the air, but he'll have a presence on the NBA finals somehow. But the NBA Countdown, hosted by Malika Andrews and with Kendrick Perkins and with Michael Wilbon, mostly, they'll still be on the air. They'll be on the games, which won't be on the high-profile NBA games, but they'll still have a presence. And I would just expect... Ken, is that when the NBA Finals comes around, they'll be the pre-game show, mm-hmm. not the Inside the NBA, which will be the pre-game show, but they'll be the pre-game show to the pre-game show to the NBA Finals. So they'll be on before Inside the NBA.
Now, the interesting part of this deal is that because it's still being produced by Turner, that that crew there will still be part of the NCAA tournament coverage on CBS.
Yeah. So what's great about that is that Ernie Johnson, Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley, they have contracts with TNT Sports to do other programming. Shaquille O'Neal does not. So three of those fourth will still be on the NCAA tournament and still make that tournament enjoyable to watch. So we look forward to seeing them on the NCAA tournament through 2032, which is when the contract ends.
I can understand Shaq not participating in the NCAA tournament because he's too busy making commercials.
His contract is only for the NBA, so that's why you don't see him on CBS when the NCAA tournament goes around. But I think he likes having the 3 weeks off the tournament. He likes having March off and then coming back when it's time to be on with the Inside the NBA guys. So I'm sure that Shaq is going to, and when he signs the contract with TNT, which is expected, his contract runs out after this season. I don't expect him to leave. I think there's news in Sports Illustrated, Jimmy Trainor said that he's a little perturbed by the fact that TNT made this announcement without telling him. But I think, once he gets a good contract, money pretty much heals a lot of things in television, as we know, Ken.
Yes.
So I expect that Shaq will be part of the Inside the NBA crew when it goes to ESPN next season.
Yeah. Well, on Friday, we had the Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight that was streamed by Netflix. And I think there were just as many complaints about the streaming situation versus against the boxing match. It seems like Netflix had some issues that I think is going to cause a lot of concern come Christmas Day, because Netflix is scheduled to televise a pair of NFL games.
Yeah, that's the thing. Now, I'll say this. I'll have one big caveat. I was watching Netflix through the Apple TV app on Friday. I was watching I was curious about it. Of course, it's a whole curiosity thing. And it was fine for me. And I also saw it a little bit on my MacBook, too. So I think Netflix on Apple was fine. I know not everybody has an Apple product. So people were using it either through their Roku or their smart TVs, and that's where the buffering got into really bad situations. People said they had issues with the speeds. They were having issues trying to watch the fight. And as bad as the boxing was, you want to be able to see a product without having a lot of lagging or buffering, and that's exactly what happened to Netflix. And now you mentioned that Netflix's next big event is going to be the NFL. That's going to be on Christmas Day. They've got two games coming up, the Steelers and Chiefs, and then the Ravens and Houston. And then to top it all off, Ken, during the halftime of the Ravens-Houston game, they're going to have Beyonce doing the halftime act. So if, let's say they have to, I don't think they will. I'll be honest with you. I think Netflix used the Tyson fight as a guinea pig for what they will see with the NFL on Christmas Day. So I think that honestly, they will get that. They will get all the kinks out and be ready for that, because it's one thing to anger NFL fans, and it's one thing to anger, you know, people just coming in just to say, hey, I just want to see some football on Christmas. But it's another thing to anger the Bayhive. You don't want to anger the Beyonce's fans. So, you know, this is a whole separate entity here. So you want to make sure that that's going to be stable. And I think the Netflix should be able to get that going. Because also, too, coming up in January, WWE Raw will start on January 6th on Netflix. So they've got to get all these kinks out pretty much in a hurry. And I think Netflix will get it done because they know if they don't have this ready for the NFL on Christmas Day, there's going to be a lot of hell to pay.
Is there enough time, though? Because remember, this fight was supposed to happen like a few months ago that Tyson took ill and sort of delayed things. So, I mean, is there enough time for them to make the necessary adjustments for the NFL?
Well, let's hope so. I think they got to realize that they got to get the right servers. If they don't get the right servers, then it's not going to work. I mean, what's interesting is that all the other NFL partners, Amazon, Comcast with Peacock, ESPN with ESPN Plus, they've all had NFL games, and they've had relatively little trouble on that. You turn on your game for Thursday Night Football for Amazon, it's there. I have not had any issues of buffering with it. So Netflix has got to say, hey, Amazon, we'll even borrow your servers. We'll rent your servers for Christmas night. They have to do something. They've got to get that right. So I have a feeling they will. If they don't, like I said, there's going to be a lot of hell to pay, not just with NFL fans, but the Beehive. And you don't want to get the Beehive angry when you don't want Beyonce fans angry. Because if you get that's like getting the Swifties angry, and that's a whole different animal. So you don't want to get them angry.
Well, let's talk. The Yankees have a new radio announcer in veteran Dave Sims. It's basically, he was working in Seattle on television out there for many years. It's basically a homecoming for Dave, having worked at WFAN on Midday Sports Talk Show with Ed Coleman. He also was a sports writer for New York Daily News. He was also from my hometown of Philadelphia. He's replacing John Sterling, who retired early into this past season, but it was around for the playoffs and the World Series. What does Dave bring to the Yankees broadcasting?
Well, first of all, he knows the team well. He's been calling baseball since I think 2009 when he joined the Seattle Mariners. He was doing a lot of freelance work for Westwood One and for ESPN, calling football and college basketball. But he really found a home calling baseball, and he did it really well. He called a few no-hitters as well. I think it's a great match for him. As you said, he lives in New York. He's from the East Coast. His son lives there. His grandchildren are in New York. So I think he's wanted to come home for quite some time. He'll work with Susan Waldman, who I believe lobbied for him hard, as they both used to work for WFAN. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great move. Dave is a great broadcaster. We've talked many times privately on Twitter. And I also talked to him for a podcast that I had a long time ago. But, you know, this is a guy who has great history. He knows New York. He knows the Yankees. He's done the American League Baseball. So this is not foreign territory for him. So I think he's going to do a great job. He's a great broadcaster. As I mentioned, done so many sports, whether it's the NCAA tournament for Westwood One, doing the Monday Night Football at one time, calling it for Westwood One, too.
Yeah, he also did Sunday Night Football, too.
He did Sunday Night Football as well. So I think it's just a great match for him just to come over and finish his career in New York and be with a franchise that is in his hometown. So I think it works out quite well for him. And as you mentioned, he was originally a Philly guy. And as you mentioned, I'll go back even farther, Ken. He hosted Sports Night. He was the replacement for Jack Spector for WNBC, 66 WNBC in the 1980s. And actually, he and Mike Breen was his producer, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
And Dave was a big NBA guy at the time, and Mike Breen was a college guy. So it's kind of funny how that kind of juxtaposed how Mike Breen became the NBA guy and Dave was a college basketball guy after that. But I think it's a great move by the Yankees. It gives them a brand name. And also, when Dave is 71, I don't know how long he's going to be calling the game, but he's in good shape, keeps himself, sharp. And by calling radio with Susan Wallman, he'll call all nine innings. I think it's a fantastic move by the Yankees, and I think I think the fans are going to be well served with Dave.
And it gives them stability too. I mean, they were going through; they had a plethora of announcers going through the season, and like I said, John Sterling came back for the postseason. So it gets the fans who listen to the radio broadcast some stability, knowing there's going to be a familiar voice there.
Absolutely. And, while a younger generation may not know Dave, the older generation does. And I think the younger generation will absolutely fall in love with his play-by-play style. He's had some great calls in Seattle. His Hey Now, I think, is going to come over and play well in New York. He's not going to be necessarily a homer, but he's going to call it right down as he sees them. And I think that's what New Yorkers like. They want to have a guy who's not – I mean, yeah, John was a homer. The Yankees, when we all know that. Yeah. But he's going to be fair, and he'll do his Hey Now, and I think that'll become a very great signature call for fans. Who I think will actually fall in love with them.
Yeah. Well, this past Sunday, CBS did something unusual, which we don't see them do during the regular season. They actually had the NFL on CBS pregame show on location at Orchard Park for that big Chiefs-Bills game on Sunday. How big was that for them to do? Because, I mean, the only time we ever see them travel is for the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't travel at all for the AFC Championship. You've seen them come from New York. But I think it's a great move. David Burson, who is the new CBS Sports president, who took over for Sean McManus, I think wanted to put his stamp on this, Ken. And by bringing and not only that, they were helped out too because Sunday night football games on NBC, which was included the Bengals and the Chargers, that was actually in the 4 o'clock spot, and that got flexed out. So CBS lucked out by having that game as the lone game in the 4:25 window, and it worked out for them because we saw the viewership was 31 million, which is absolutely a monster number. We don't usually see that number in that slot outside of we don't see numbers like that at all for that slot. So for them to go out there and have a presence at the at their 4:25 game, I would look to see how successfully that was. And of course, you got to have a enthusiastic fan base like that. And it worked out with Bills Mafia because one of the viral moments was the NFL crew, including Bill Cowher, break tables, jump on tables, and that was a great moment. And I think that it's not like Kansas City, that'll work there. New England right now probably won't work, but you want to go to a place that has an enthusiastic fan base, and it worked out perfectly for the NFL today. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do more of that. And Jim Nantz said, "Hey, look, I invite you to come out here more." And I think he wants to see them more. And I think it's a great move because we've seen College Game Day. We've seen Big Noon Kickoff, get that atmosphere with the fans. And it adds a lot more to your show than just being in an antiseptic studio, like in New York or Los Angeles, as the case is with Fox Sports Sunday. Fox Sports NFL Sunday. Yeah. So I would see the NFL. I would think the NFL is going to do a lot more of that, especially with David Burson on board. He would look for the perfect place, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them go to Kansas City or Cincinnati down the line this season.
Yeah, I mean, it probably won't be an every week thing. I think maybe they would do it on their doubleheader day when they have the 4:25 game. That would be good. We know Fox does get out for the Veterans Day every year. So that's about their only time until the NFC Championship game. So, Yeah. It was fun. I mean, it was done. You know, we don't see it. And like I said, you said CBS sometimes just stays stuck in the studio, but that was good for them to get out. And I think everybody enjoyed it. And maybe that's something they will do down the road. And maybe if the Fox sees that as successful, maybe they'll, you know, because what they remember when Joe Buck was the host that one year, the bridge between James Brown and Kurt Menefee, you know, they went to the sites where Joe is calling the game. And that really didn't, you know, I don't know how well that worked, but if you do, like I said, 425 games and you go to play, you know, like Philadelphia would be a great place too, if, as long as they're not, you know, I know the Eagles fans, they may be a little too crazy, but but that's something. I mean, as you said, I mean, you see College Game Day and the Fox College Big Noon kickoff. It's the fans enjoy it. I mean, they love it. You know, especially when, you know, Lee Corso still puts on that the mascot's headgear. Yeah. So people eat that up. And there's a lot of people complained earlier this season about Pat McAfee ruining it. But my thing is, I mean, he may not be your cup of tea, but he caters to that crowd out there and they go along with him. And I think he brings something to the table that maybe people didn't really maybe underestimate it.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that ESPN did a survey and found that fans actually like Pat McAfee there, and he reaches the generation that is watching that show, young kids, and they really like him and they respond to him. So I think that having him on the show, I really have a feeling that he's going to succeed Lee Corso in doing the headgear pick down the line, or doing the pick that I think they're grooming him to be his successor. But overall, I think Pat McAfee has found something with the field goal kick and, you know, donating it, you know, giving money to the kids who do it and donating money to great causes. So people have responded to that. And, you know, is Pat McAfee am I the target audience for Pat McAfee? No, but he does something that the audience likes, especially for College Game Day, and it's working. And I expect him to see him on there long term.
Well, Ken, you have a new social media spat. Where can we find you?
Yeah, so I've joined Blue Sky, so you can check. And what's great about that, I was able to get my handle, so it's fangsbites@bluesky.social. I've also just started a Substack, too, so it will be subscription, but right now for the rest of November, all of the columns on Substack will be free. Then if you go up subscription in December, there'll be some free columns there, but most of it will be subscription-based, but yeah, I've decided to join Bluer Skies. I went to the Blue Skies. So I'm still on X/Twitter. I'm just not going to have a heavier as presence as I am. Most of my stuff is going to be migrating over to Blue Sky. And I know, Ken, that you're on there as well. Mm-hmm. So I certainly hope that we'll have some great discourse over there and no trolls. And if you're going to troll me, I'm going to block you. So that's where you can find me. I'm also on Threads too, but I don't really post as much. But Blue Sky is where I think I'm going to be doing most of my stuff. And like I said, Substack I just started. So there's a free column up there. It's fangsbikes.substack.com. So you can find that there as well. So certainly hope that you'll find me, and certainly hope that, you know, I hope to respond with all of you.
Well, Ken, appreciate it a few minutes as always, and have a great holiday season, and we'll chat in 2025.
Absolutely, Ken. Thanks very much, and I'll talk to you soon. Happy holidays, everyone.
Hey, thank you very much. That's Ken Fang. We'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest in just a moment.
Coaches and student athletes. ECAC Hockey, 12 programs competing at the highest level. A league where champions are born and world-class professionals are trained. Where history is abundant and a commitment to the cutting edge is unrivaled. The best facilities, the fiercest competition. ECAC Hockey, there's no experience like it.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Editor Andrew Pugliese. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2025.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 11 winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick'em Football Contest was John Hauser of Troy with a 14-0 record. John wins a $100 Hannaford gift card. Congratulations, John. The VIP winners were Matt Margiota of S&G Roofing and me. We both went 12-2. I improved to 115-51, and I'm tied for first place with Scott Hudson of Emmerich's. My Gazette colleague Adam Schindler was 11-3. He is 112-54. I'll announce the You Pick'em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick'em Football banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Adam Schindler, Andrew Catalan, Dennis Wozniak Jr., and Ken Fang for being on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shots, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X, Threads, and now Blue Sky at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schatz. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.